Is it a situation of outside folks coming in, or is it a thing of people just having enough?
It's the thing of people having enough. There's in Austin, I can tell you, most of the people that I'm seeing at the police station where a lot of this very violent behavior is happening from the police is those are Austinites. You know, we've had some issues with our local Red Guard folks here. That's a whole nother story, but I don't know of any outside agitators here. In San Antonio, it seems like the police are being a lot more measured. The police here are scared. They have all of their equipment that Chief Acevedo, who's now a Houston police chief, went and got them through a lot of federal grant dollars, and they just were so ready to use it. They had the LRAD sound cannons out yesterday on standby. They were ready to use those. The first time they've used tear gas was yesterday that I've seen since probably the 80s against the Brown Berets, you know, fighting the Nazis and the boat races and the things that were impeding on the east side. They were, you know, fighting the gentrification way back then. But they haven't used tear gas on us since, you know, since I've been an activist here in the late 90s. And that was unprecedented. And then they tried to lie that was tear gas. They said it was smoke. And then the media was confused. And once they realized, oh, yeah, they announced it from their sound speaker in the helicopter before they did it, so everybody's got on tape that they were going to get caught. So then they had to retract it and say, yeah, yeah, it was. It was actually a mixture of tear gas and smoke.
Wow. DJ Styles and Chaney, you all were out. Styles, you wrote some very insightful posts and posted pictures. What was it like for you in Oakland? And from what you've been hearing and seeing, how have things seemed different? And from the past, how have things seemed different? First of all, let me ask with the narrative. White folks coming in from outside the community and hijacking the movement, is that something that you saw going on, or was it just an Oakland protest?
So I personally saw many multifaceted levels to this. And anybody who's protested in Oakland knows it's always been a pretty multiracial coalition of people. So, and you get outsiders who show up and try to cause trouble. Real Oaklanders, we usually stand up and protect our beloved institutions and our small businesses typically. I even heard, so I went out Friday night, and that was the first big night of protest.
7,000 people came out.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, one thing I find that's interesting is, you know, within the movement of protesting and stuff, and I've always participated, but I've never joined any coalitions or organizations, and I'm finding like the backfight between different organizations and trying to control the narrative. And the narrative right now to me, I know the backdrop is racism and police brutality, but I think there's a bigger rage boiling in our nation. And it's not a black thing or a white thing or a Mexican thing. I mean, we have no shortage of atrocities to look at. Kids in cages, Donald Trump going crazy. And quite honestly, I mean, I'm a school teacher. I've been working with youth for 15 years. And as I listen to the young people, their rage is justified. And they've actually been trying to get our attention for a long time. And we all kind of know growing up, you know, they have that adage, children are to be seen and not heard. And some of them are raging and want to be heard. And I mean, even if you look at like their futures, some of these kids in schools, you know, as we're talking about stuff like climate change, within the next 30 to 40 to 50 years, I mean, there are all kinds of reports that the planet won't be as habitable as it is now, which is their future, their adulthood, which they're upset about. They feel like they've been cheated. By all of the generations before them. So, I see a righteous rage going on across the country. And, you know, as I look at the different protests and what I'm saying, like, you know, I know like someone I was getting into a discussion with was just trying to say it was all about George Floyd. And I kept saying, no, this is a lot more different rage than that. I mean, even the fact we had COVID-19 this year, and as a school teacher, we just cut kids off. Go home, don't come back to school. They're very social people. They like to hang out, date, flirt, cut up in class together. But now they're all sitting home, isolated. That, and you know, I don't think we're really looking at the effects of mental health. I mean, for all of us as adults, how many of us have been going a little bit stir crazy sitting at home? I live by myself, so that can get a little lonely. I hear from certain couples, they're like, man, I wish I could have a break. You know what I mean? So, you know, just all of that. And, you know, I have something I want to read from a young man. Someone shared this with me, and this was a kid who wrote, "Ain't nobody using George Floyd incident to steal nothing. We tried so many other solutions to be heard, and that ain't worked. So as a community, we thought the only way we would be heard is if we grab their attention by vandalizing stores. And I hate to say it, but this world ain't never gonna change based off racism." Now, this is a young man who is expressing the sentiments of his generation. And you know, like I said, you know, it's like an opportunity. Like, one thing that's different now too with the what happened in Oakland was, you know, typically in all of our protests, especially when it breaks into looting or destruction or any of that, it's always centered in our downtown area. And we have all these affluent suburban communities that never get hit. And for years, you know, someone's kind of like, why don't we go there? Or why do we tear up our neighborhood? But this weekend, man, they went to all these suburbs, Walnut Creek. They went to, you know, they went to Bay Street in Emeryville. I mean, some really high-end affluent spots who've never been attacked. And the brother who spoke before me, he spoke on how did they get the police station. And I kind of laughed about that because I thought, well, Minneapolis is rookies and they've never really been through this level of, you know. And I'm saying in juxtaposition, Friday night, you know, crowds always descend on the Oakland police station. And I, you know, ironically, I kind of say they're like the Bill Russell. They're 56-0. Like, you know, they've been protecting their station since the Black Panther Party's been trying to take it down. So they know what to do. They're like, you ain't going to take our home base, you know? And, but, you know, we still have that spirit. But one thing I just want to say is, like, as we look at the ethnicity, are they white? Are they black? Who's driving it? And as I'm saying, the justified rage of youth, I don't think that sees any color or ethnicity. And I mean, when you look at youth, I mean, I've watched a lot of live feeds last night of, I mean, these kids actually got podcasts as they're looting or filming, and they actually got their Cash Apps up, like, please donate to me as they're filming. And I'm saying, technology, they have a whole new way of getting down and organizing. And I think there are definitely lots of organizations that organize and put things together. But then there's this whole group who's like outside of the system, who's like, we're decentralized. We have rage. We want to express it. We can't express it within the limits of walking on the police sanctioned sidewalk as they escort us. We want to express it a different way. One last thing I like to add too. Another thing, the backdrop of the election. I mean, we got to choose between the least oppressive regime. And, you know, to some people, that's not good enough. And one thing I constantly get into debates about is people who are really upset with the apathetic people who don't vote. When I'm always saying their apathy is actually them showing, I don't believe in this system and I'm not going to rubber stamp it with a vote. And to some, like, when I'm seeing some of the stuff going across the country, I'm wondering, how many of these are people who are not voters, who are like, when people go, well, you got to vote for Biden or what else, they're showing us right now, what else? This is what else? Well, we'll tear this thing down if, you know. And so I just think there's a lot of discussions that need to go on generationally with all of our folks and, you know, things that are missed opportunities going on here.
I appreciate that, Styles. And you gave us a lot to think about. Where do you see things headed? You know, what are the next step? What do you think people should be doing? And Chael, let me start with you out of Minneapolis. Oh. What do you, you know, this is the epicenter. And I think that epicenter is now a little bit obscured. We know the name George Floyd, but we're not talking about Minneapolis anymore, right?
Yeah,
as a city. We're not talking about the organizing that's going on. And we're not talking about the history that you all have had, where we can look at the track record of the organizing you all did around the murder of Philando Castile, right? The murder around Jamar Clark, where you all did, quote unquote, everything you're supposed to do. You petitioned, you got people elected, you know, you did all this stuff, and things have gotten worse. And now we're finding out that you had a cop who had 18 violations who was still on there. The other cop had six, including a lawsuit that where he beat up somebody after he lied and said that he had a warrant. And these people were never touched. So where do you think things are headed, and what do you want our listeners to know?
Well, some good news from yesterday was that the governor appointed Attorney General Keith Ellison to be the lead on the prosecution. Keith Ellison, I think, will be able to bring some measure of reason to this, and to be able to pull out all his stops and be able to go after what has really been a big defense by the police unions. Our local police union head is notoriously known as a white supremacist. He's in many photos with, you know, at Donald Trump rallies. He has been very vocal. He has been he's been saying he wants to defend these cops' jobs, you know. And so my hope is that not only will Derek Chauvin be prosecuted, but that the rest of these police officers will also be charged and arrested, and that we can start to set a precedent for this country no longer accepting violent policing.
Right. What about the white supremacist situation? Because we heard that there was an increase in activity prior to any of that. There's been recruiting, as you talked about, the head of the police union associates that. And it may seem kind of strange to us in the Bay. So how do you all dance with that situation?
This is the Great White North, to be honest with you. I envy the position to be able to have so many black and brown people around me. Oftentimes it feels like we're sort of stuck on an island out here. You drive about 10-20 minutes outside of the city, and it starts to get really rural, and it starts to get very red when you look at the political maps. I think that we I'm not exactly sure how we're gonna get past that, you know. Really, that's kind of a and I see this in this political landscape. Yes, we're going to have an election soon. I have a fear that some of this recruiting and some of this show of force of, you know, white supremacist groups is less for the black and brown community. We know that they're there. Maybe this is for the outer ring suburbs. Maybe this is for those in greater Minnesota to see, oh, the Klan's got your back. That's really my great fear for this. I'm wondering where the FBI is in this. I would like to see some investigations happening.
Right, but they're probably investigating you as a protester before
exactly,
they're doing
that. Yeah. I mean, hey, it's COINTELPRO all over again. You know, it doesn't change.
Debbie, how do you see this from the work that you've done over the years with the ACLU and others? How do you start to deal with white nationalism, and does it impact, you know, first of all, has it impacted Austin? I know at one point there was a guy named Darby that had infiltrated a lot of the organizations that were in Austin and caused a lot of damage, and then he went down to New Orleans and befriended people and did damage there. But moving forward, you know, how have you all were able to overcome that, and what lessons could you pass along to our listeners for dealing with that in a state like Texas that, you know, you're right down the street where people will actually, you know, step to the plate and proudly associate themselves?
Well, we've run him out of town, so that's one thing. But yeah, that's what we learned, was not to wait, not to sit by and let people have their freedom of speech. Yeah, people can have their freedom of speech, but we also have the freedom of speech to counter that. And so we are much quicker and much more adept at countering and calling people out on things than we used to be. We used to be a sleepy little town. We didn't, another first this week in Forest was taking I-35. It's elevated in front of HBD HQ. And we tried to take it before and been thwarted where there wasn't enough of us, but there was thousands on Saturday and thousands on Sunday that just ran up the structural elevated pieces and took it. That was a first for us. From the police perspective, shooting at medics was a first for them. They would not allow medics to get in and tend to people they already shot. And there were several medics that went to the hospital. A lot of tales of that. But, the whole fact that they're shooting Black people in front of their police headquarters that are protesting the killing of Black people really drives home the point that Black lives really don't matter to them.
Real talk. We're joined now with Chaney Turner and also Sonia Lewis. I'm glad you were able to come in. But Chaney, let me get you in here and share your thoughts from this weekend. As we were talking earlier, there were a lot of different formations that were happening around the country. Some of them we cheered when we saw them on TV, but there were some backstories and some other things. For example, the Walmart was burnt down. Here in Oakland or outside in San Leandro, a lot of small businesses were totally robbed. Black businesses, in fact, as we're speaking, there are folks cleaning up. But there were also big corporate entities that, you know, that got stimulus checks and then they were robbed and people were like, all right, why am I feeling sorry? So, Chaney, how have you seen it? Because you live in deep East Oakland and some of this rampaging hit where you're at.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Davey. The overall, the energy has just been really weird in Oakland. But particularly over here in East Oakland, usually when there's, you know, protests or actions, they're centered downtown Oakland and people are, and if unfortunately some stuff pop off, it's usually centered there. The fact that there were people who weren't protesting but just outright looting in areas like Deep East Oakland, it's kind of disturbing because I would like to know, you know, who gathered the people together. I've been seeing suspicious tweets on Twitter that I'm sure are from bots that have been directing people to go to certain neighborhoods and loot. And, you know, if you have a community of people who haven't been organized around what real protesting is, they might feel that looting is their form of protest. And if you, you know, don't know how to channel some of that anger and pain. And so I personally don't have any negative feelings towards, you know, some of these young people. I live here in East Oakland at Durant Square, which is historically has been a mall, but also there's residential areas upstairs. And so, you know, yesterday after attending the action downtown, I got a call from a neighbor and said, you know, they're trying to invade our building. And so, you know, I came home and the perimeter was blocked off on all sides by police, and they had broken into the mall. Now, the problem is that if you are familiar with East Oakland and Durant, these stores and independent vendors have been here, some for about 30 years. And the mall has been completely closed since shelter in place has been put in place. So these people have not been receiving any type of sales or income for months. And now they have to deal with trying to replace, you know, some of their goods. Same thing at Foothill Square. It was completely looted, you know, some of the stores there. Now, when it comes to Walmart, I have different feelings. You know, it's Walmart, a corporation that has exploited people of color and immigrants for decades. and do not pay people, you know, livable wages. Also, you know, a black man who had mental, you know, mental health issues, Stephen Taylor, was just murdered inside that same Walmart. You know, when the shelter in place kind of first went into right. play. So when it comes to that, I don't have any compassion for those corporations. You know, burn them to the ground. And I just want to, you know, also uplift people who have been spending their time and energy organizing the people. Kat Brooks and Anti-Police Terror Project, I believe, organized an excellent action yesterday through caravans. Was able to keep
5,000 cars.
5,000 cars. And it was amazing, you know, to see. It was also, you know, healing to participate. Like, you know, Lawrence said, you know, some of us live alone or have not been able to be in community to really vent, you know, how we feel and protest, especially if you're here from Oakland. Protest has always been a form of how we can express our anger and vent to, to the city about right. about how we feel in different grievances. I also want to point out that there were over 15 different cannabis dispensaries that were looted as well. And some of those are small and equity-owned cannabis businesses here. Blunts and More, which is a Black-owned dispensary, was looted. Magnolia Wellness, which is a woman-owned dispensary that hires within the community, was actually hit 2 times. And us in the cannabis community, you know, have been in conversation, and that was not organized by looters or protesters. The cannabis community and certain dispensaries have been targeted for a while, and people use this as an opportunity to go and target those dispensaries, unfortunately. And so, as someone who's a small business owner and is a, you know, advocate for small businesses and equity, people have already been, you know, suffering and losing business. And with a business like cannabis, where folks do not qualify for federal stimulus relief, this is just, you know, another barrier. And unfortunately, some people won't be able to recover.
We appreciate you giving some insight, and we plan to bring in a lot of those small businesses that got hit up and have a more in-depth roundtable. As we're speaking, many are downtown working with those folks that got hit up and trying to make sense of how that happened. Sonia Lewis, Sony Baloney, how you doing? Out of Sacramento. Let me unmute you there. There
yes.
you go. I'm glad that you were able to join us on the line. Sacramento was a hot spot, and just like in Austin, where a couple of people were shot with rubber bullets, and in San Jose, and you all had, you know, some horrific outings there, and these were peaceful protests. And
absolutely.
Maybe you can contextualize this, because I saw you do your Facebook Live. You were talking about how proud you were that there were these young people, because it was mostly youth that were out there, that was up at the state capitol doing exactly what you're supposed to do, right? To petition those in power. And yet a 14-year-old girl was shot between the eyes, and then a young man was shot in the head, right?
Yes.
Both of them, I heard, will survive, but you've been in touch, and tell us about it, because your enthusiasm at the start of the march had me ready to drive that 2 hours up there to join you all, only to find out that this had happened. And, you know, what do you loot? There's no looting in front of the Capitol. So what are we talking about here?
Right. So we started on Wednesday of last week with a candlelight vigil at the corner of Florin Road and 65th Expressway. We took the street for about an hour and a half, 2 hours maybe, to basically challenge this community to start thinking about what it means to pause when Black lives are lost, when they are died, when they are murdered, when we are lynched in public form the way that George Floyd was murdered, right? And so that started a like a domino effect of events that have taken place with different organizations, and sometimes organizers, especially young people who don't have the skill and the wherewithal to know how to effectively mobilize, but because they have that organic rage and frustration that they are experiencing inside of their bodies, what do we do to get that out? And so as a community leader, I always want to make sure that there are individuals like myself who are lending their eyes and ability to be a moral witness in those moments, so that law enforcement, media, and our elected officials do not change the narrative to what is actually going on and what is being actually asked for, right? That people are actually listening to what is taking place in the streets. So Friday, there was a protest that it started in Oak Park, which is one of our communities that is heavily gentrified, and Black folks have been pushed out for the past 10 years. It started at the Big Park, which has currently in this moment, when we are talking about being on shelter or sanctuary in place, Black folks have been targeted at that park for the past 3 months, right? And so when we talk about cities of New York, where you can see images of people in Central Park being handed masks if you're white, gloves if you're white, but then you're being tackled to the ground if you're Black or brown. So those kind of same things are being are happening in the community of Oak Park in Sacramento. And so they started from that park, and they marched to the police station that's closest, which is about a mile and a half march. They then held the line against a very strong police present line, and they were able to articulate very eloquently what their frustration is. Then they took the street, and we know that in taking the street, that's peaceful protest. We want people to pause in that moment and think about what has happened in this moment, honor the life of someone who was taken unjustly. From there, law enforcement does what it normally does, and they get tired of protests, because the protesters will, they have this innate ability to withstand and out, you know, stand the police. The goal of it is, when the police show up, how soon can we make them leave, right? That's at least one of the goals. And eventually, SAC PD, SAC Sheriff, and the California Highway Patrol corralled a group of young people on a bridge, very similarly to what they did after Stephon Clark was murdered 2 years ago now, right? And so where there were 89 people who were arrested on a bridge after the police led them in the direction of that bridge and then prevented them from crossing the bridge, if you don't remember that incident that took place here. So this is kind of the legacy of protest here in Sacramento. And I'm an Oakland girl, you know, born and raised. That's where I get my roots from. I was one of those college students who, back in 92, I believe it was 92, when the verdict came out for Rodney King and we stopped traffic on the Bay Bridge. So I was one. So that's the vein of my activism, is I want to be in the face of those who say we can't, right? Because those who say we can't have the power, and they refuse to change it. Right. And so Saturday, we ended up at the Capitol. I should say they ended up at the Capitol. It was a crowd that was organized by two female college students. And maybe they didn't have, you know, it all organized in a way that, you know, myself or other organizers who are a little bit more experienced would have approached it. But you had people in community who were bringing out water and snacks. And it was a beautiful thing to see the California Highway Patrol trying to protect a piece of property, which we know that is also one of goals of law enforcement. And these young people who were just standing in the face of them, expressing what they needed to get off of their chest. And then they marched around the city, came back. There's no looting that can take place there. The goal of it was for the police to leave, for law enforcement to leave. And they didn't. And so the people left. We know in any kind of protest that there are infiltrators, that there are imposters, and that sometimes it is white folks in particular who are showing up doing things that are counterproductive to the safety and livelihood of Black people who are protesting in those moments. And so you will see all around Sacramento graffiti, art, I call it art, expressing, you know, F12 and BLM and George Floyd's name being tagged all over this town. I wish that some of it wasn't cleaned up so quickly, because people need to see that Monday morning when they start to go to work and say, that's why they were protesting, right?
Right.
They ended up in front of the jail. They egged the jail. We don't know who broke the glass at the jail, but I believe that there were imposters in that crowd. And when we talk about imposters and infiltrators, we also have to talk about, which the young lady just mentioned, opportunists. There's going to always be an element of opportunist in every community when it comes to where the police putting their focus in those times of outrage, and then where they can take advantage of other parts of our community. While I might not be a looter, I don't think that my overall perspective is corporations and businesses have something that people don't have. We live in a society of have and have nots. Capitalism has taught us that the have-nots are going to fight back when they feel pressured. And I believe that even the opportunists and the looters who are out there doing this damage and destruction in community need to be honored and listened to. They need to be honored and respected, because one of the things that that message is sending is, one, business owners, and I don't want to sound callous in making this assessment, but business owners have insurance. You file your insurance claim and your property is replaced, right? Your life wasn't taken. George Floyd's life was taken. We cannot bring him back to his daughters and his family. He's in heaven with his mother, hopefully, right? So I hear people who say, oh, well, the looting is so, it sends the wrong message. It sends the appropriate message that you've been taking from my community for far too long. This country, America, has looted this world for 400 years. It has looted Black bodies from the country, from the continent of Africa. It has looted all over this continent, all over the world, right? And so when we talk about capitalism, when we talk about democracy, I cannot for the life of me stand by and listen to people who want to bash and blame young people in the
you
street.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting